What's up, fools? This is the QTR Podcast. Today is July 16th, 2018, and we have an awesome podcast in store today because I have two people that were kind enough to join me to toss around their views on Netflix. I have with me on the line both Montana Skeptic, who of course is a Tesla skeptic, really is the best way to put it. He is a he's a Tesla short seller. He writes prominently about the company on Seeking Alpha. If you haven't read him, he has he's definitely been a vocal critic of the company and vocal critic of Elon Musk. And I also am very happy to have with me Galileo Russell, who is from Hyperchange TV, which is a YouTube channel that he runs focused on, I believe, alternative energy and kind of the future of energy media. He has somewhere around 10,000 subscribers. He's got a very substantial following on YouTube. And famously, he was asked to ask a question on Tesla's conference call last quarter as well. So I'm sure that probably did well for his web show as well. Anyways, I reached out to both of these participants last week to see if the guys would want to come on and kind of give their thoughts on Tesla in a structured format. Galileo is obviously a supporter of the company and a supporter of Elon Musk, and Montana Skeptic is definitely on the critical side. So after speaking to both people, they were kind enough to agree to a format that I'm going to try and uphold very rigidly today that ensures that both participants will have the same amount of time to speak. The way that the debate is going to work, or really it's a discussion, you can call it debate, I don't really, you can call it whatever the hell you want, but we're all friends here. The way it's going to work is I'm going to allow both people to make an opening statement. It's going to be 4 minutes each. I'll be timing these things to make sure that the that they're held to the time that they're allocated. We decided on three different topics, so both participants were allowed to submit a topic, and I picked a topic of my own. And then from there, each individual have 4 minutes to speak on each topic and then 90 seconds to rebut the other person on the topic. And from there, we'll just have some closing statements. And hopefully, if everything goes well, we'll have the whole thing wrapped up short and sweet in somewhere around an hour. So without further ado, gentlemen, thank you guys both for joining me.
Yep. Thanks for having me.
Skeptic, are you with us
happy,
as well?
Happy to be here, though I'm not going to be talking about Netflix, but we'll be talking about Tesla.
Did I say Netflix?
Just yep. At the very start.
What's that?
Just at the start you did.
Yeah. Oh, I did? Well, I'm watching their stock go down $55 on earnings right in front of me. Oh. It's on the screen. So anyways, that's probably why. Yes, we're talking about Tesla. We're not talking about Netflix. That's my fault. Jeez, can't even get through the damn introduction. Okay, so without further ado, you guys are each going to have 4 minutes to make your opening statements on Tesla, what your position is on the company. I've done kind of the selection at random so that the people that I've alternated the order for the debate. So without further ado, Galileo, if you want to go first, you have 4 minutes just to talk about your stance on Tesla.
Okay, yeah. So taking a step back, I'm a Tesla shareholder and big fan of the company. The biggest reason I'm invested in the company is the CEO. I like to bet on the jockey, not the horse. So I think Tesla is in a really unique position in that Elon Musk is one of the smartest leaders in the world right now, just given his track record of starting and selling software companies like Zip2, PayPal. You know, he has a track record of being a visionary, first mover, disruptor. At the same time, he's also shown an incredible combination of being both an incredible engineer and a business person, which I think is incredibly rare. And so I think of him as almost a technical founder, sort of CTO person, as well as an incredible business person. And so that's the first lens I look at Tesla through, is an incredible leader, and that's who I want to bet on. The second is one of my investing sayings is the bigger the problem, the bigger the opportunity. And I believe that there's a massive opportunity for our transport systems to get electrified and also to become autonomous. And I think Tesla is a leader and first mover in both of those areas. And I think a successful company, and I think if they successfully execute and building a company around those two problems, then this can be a huge, huge company. And, you know, I have a very similar philosophy around their energy business, where I think there's a huge problem where a grid needs to go sustainable. And by them fixing that, will there in turn create an incredible business. And so I think the company right now is in startup mode. And so they're burning a lot more capital than they're taking in, because they're expanding production. You know, they're building out massive factories to be able to pump out millions of cars per year, not just a couple hundred thousand. And that's why their income statement and financials look like they're losing money now, when the reality is the bulk of that is going towards investments to build the future. And a couple stats and data points that get me really excited about Tesla is, you know, this is a company that's been compounding revenue at 93%. They got to 20, or they're going to get to 20 billion in revenue from 100 million faster than Amazon did. So they're literally one of the fastest growing companies of all time. You know, if you look at their vehicles delivered per share, if you look at their revenue per share, these numbers are compounding well above 50% since the IPO. And so I believe we're getting a lot of tremendous earnings power and value being justified, even though the company isn't actually producing positive earnings yet. And I still think we're sort of in inning one of Tesla. Well, right now they're just selling high-end cars. They're going to reinvest that, use their technology to bring cheaper and cheaper cars to market, taking a larger and larger portion of the auto market, while simultaneously improving their battery technology and continually to serve, you know, these grid scale utility projects like the one we saw in Australia. And so I think, you know, in the future, this company will look a lot different from just selling the Model S and X, these luxury cars that are on the income statement now. And it'll be selling, you know, 10 times as many cars. It'll be a huge player in energy. And then I think what they're doing in terms of autonomy will become a key puzzle piece later in the story. And so that's sort of my overview, high-level vision of Tesla is, you know, you have an incredible CEO. They're building amazing products. And I think they have a really unique sort of combination of Apple-esque perfectionism and minimalism and focusing on the customer, as well as this sort of breakneck growth at all costs, Amazon-style fiscal engineering strategy, which makes them one of the most fascinating investments right now. And I think, you know, although I'm incredibly excited about Tesla and think this has the opportunity to become, you know, a several hundred billion dollar company, the world's largest automaker by market cap, because I think they'll be selling their cars more profitably than every other automaker. And so, yeah, that is sort of my overview, high level of the company.
Okay, thanks. And Skeptic, so you have 4 minutes also for your opening statement, and then you can also take 90 seconds to rebut Galileo's opening statement, and then Galileo will have 90 seconds after you to rebut your opening statement. So in sum, you have 5 minutes and 30 seconds to use as you please.
Okay, terrific. So my short thesis, I can't cover it all, but it would start, I think, with competition. For the past 6 years, Tesla has owned the luxury EV market. And if it is it was the luxury EV market. It had no competitors at all. And yet with a complete monopoly in that market, and with lavish subsidies totaling billions of dollars, it lost fabulous amounts of money. So through the end of last year, it had lost just a tick under $5 billion. And by the way, those are real losses. They're not profits that were reinvested. There was no CapEx there, okay? That's just the loss. The CapEx comes from constant capital infusions. It has had no profits to reinvest. I don't know where we get this. They're reinvesting their money because they have none to reinvest. So this year, they've already lost, they lost 700 million plus in the first quarter. They're on schedule to lose about that amount again in the second quarter. And now Tesla is getting competition in this luxury EV space. Jaguar's I-Pace has arrived. Scores of journalists who have driven it and reviewed it think it's superior to the Tesla cars. Next year, we'll see luxury EVs from Audi and Mercedes. And then following that, you'll see Porsche and Volvo. We already see sales of the Model S falling off, and that's what's been the high margin car. The average sales price has been dropping. The Model 3 is cannibalizing the Model S, it appears. And I think that the introduction of the luxury EVs from these competitors are going to gut the margins further. And I think in Europe already, Tesla is no longer the aspirational luxury EV. And within a year, that will be true in the U.S. and Asia. So we're told, well, the Model 3 is what Tesla's future is. it will be the money-making car. It will sell in hundreds of thousands of units. Well, it's been in production for a year now, and Tesla has lost more money during the four quarters it's been in production than in any other one-year period in its history. Now, Tesla can break even, perhaps, maybe even make a bit of money selling the Model 3 at an average price of $60,000. That's what it's going to attempt to do for the remainder of this year when it offers the all-wheel drive, long-range versions and tries to upsell some of the premium packages. But the addressable market for a car that expensive, especially a sedan, is quite limited. Tesla is going to run out of demand at that price point. The promised $35,000 car doesn't exist. Musk said Tesla will lose money and die if it tries to sell the car for that price. If it ever does exist, there won't be any tax credit that goes with it, any full tax credit. And a lot of the deposit makers were counting on that. So competition to me is a huge problem. I don't think Tesla has some competitive advantage. There's no moat. Yes, the supercharger network is better than what anybody has right now, but in Europe, they have a CCS network going in that will be superior. And any time Tesla's competitors decide it makes sense to duplicate the a charging network, they can get together, agree on a standard, and do it in short order. Valuation is a huge, ultimately, it's all about valuation. GM has a price equity ratio of about 6. Ford is about 7. Let's say Tesla, we're going to have a double that. Let's call it 15. With its present market cap, Tesla would have to have earnings of $3.5 billion per year to achieve even that inflated ratio. There's just no way to get there from here. In terms of Galileo's points, I mean, he's betting on Elon Musk, whom I think is a very irrational person. I would love to hear Galileo's view about his accusation that the diver in Thailand was a pedophile and his view about whether that's incredible leadership. Elon Musk is not an incredible engineer. He's not an engineer at all. He's not an incredible leader. If he were, all his top management would not be exiting as quickly as they are. The EV revolution isn't coming, okay? Right now, EVs cannot survive without subsidies. The batteries are just too expensive. Someday that won't be true, but they're not price competitive right now. They're a niche product without subsidies. So that's just way down the road. Australia, I don't see any energy storage breakthroughs by Tesla. The Australia project was at best break even if Tesla didn't lose money on it. There's a lot has been written about Australia. It's an underwhelming nothing, and it certainly wasn't profitable. So I guess, those are my thoughts, and it's, I think, Galileo's turn.
Perfect. Yeah, exactly. Almost to the second, actually. So Galileo, you have 90 seconds if you'd like to respond.
Yeah, totally. So competition, these, I think you could have said the same thing about the Chevy Bolt coming. Right now, the Model 3 is outselling the Chevy Bolt 6-1. Tesla is the top three best-selling electric cars in the U.S. You know, as you said, they've been out here for 6 years. No one can come up with a car that's even getting close to them in sales. Talk is cheap. I'll believe that the competition can have a better EV when they actually do it and bring it to market, instead of this narrative of constantly saying, oh, well, this other EV is going to come out. And then the EV you were talking about 6 months ago, in this case, the Bolt, did come out. It did have all the specs. It is half the price. It is available, and no one's buying it, because I think Tesla is a superior product in a lot of different ways. Second of all, I think it's ironic to say the EV revolution isn't coming when your argument is that competition is going to wipe out Tesla. Like, I just think that's sort of a catch-22 to say that EVs are a niche product and it's not ready for prime time, when Tesla's car generated 400,000 to 500,000 pre-orders without a single test drive. That's like iPhone level industry breaking demand. There isn't one car in the entire world that comes close to a backlog like that. So I don't know. I don't piece together how this is only a niche thing and the EV revolution isn't here, when we're literally seeing hundreds of thousands of customers line up to buy the car. In terms of the valuation, I think Ford and GM look very cheap because they're banks, not car companies, and they're super levered to use prices for internal combustion engine vehicles, and that is what their balance sheet is securitized by. I think that is a massive weakness as we shift to EVs, and the market is correctly discounting the PE ratio and valuation of those firms because of the weak outlook, not to mention the fact that Tesla
okay,
is coming out
time.
With cheaper cars.
That's time, Galileo. Thank you. All right. So the first topic that we're going to talk about after we've moved on from the opening statements, and you'll have to forgive me for enforcing the time stringently, but I wanted to make sure that both people have exactly the same amount of time. I don't want to be accused of being impartial, so I'll enforce that for both of you the same way. Anyways, okay. So the first topic is the topic that was submitted by Montana Skeptic. The topic is Tesla's CapEx sufficient enough to support the Model 3, Model Y, Tesla Semi, Roadster 2, solar roof tiles, and everything else. And so, Galileo, you're going to answer first here. You have 4 minutes to address Tesla's CapEx and whether or not it's sufficient for these new projects.
I believe that Tesla's current CapEx for 2018 is not going to address any of those projects except for the Model 3. And so I think it's important to look at Tesla as sort of this thing of moving pieces, as they're investing CapEx in terms in one project and then moving on to the next. And I actually think the restraint is not the amount of capital they can deploy, but the rate at which they're expanding manufacturing operations. Like when you're expanding the, you know, manufacturing of a product, growing that beyond 100% is almost irresponsible and breaking the supply chain levels of growth. So I think that sort of rule of thumb of 100% growth of a manufacturing company, which we've seen Tesla basically bump against throughout their history, is really the limiting factor of growth, not the amount of CapEx that they can have on hand. And so frankly, I think they're gonna be able to spend enough CapEx to get Model 3 above 5,000 per week. Then they're gonna start to be able to produce operational cash flow from that on the order of between $0 to $500 million, maybe a little above $500 million per year. And then that will start to subsidize future CapEx. But I think it's super important to note that I believe Tesla will have to raise capital to be able to fund future things like the Model Y and the Semi, because the bottom line is, you know, this is a business where you need to build out massive lines of robots and factories before you start selling the car, generating revenue. That means investing billions of dollars up front. And so I believe we're going to see Tesla show profitability with the Model 3, but have spent most of their money, and the money coming in from the Model 3 by the end of the year won't be enough to cover all of the CapEx for 2019. Therefore, Tesla will do a capital raise. And what's really frustrating to me is I wish Tesla didn't force profitability. And I know, the bears have some valid points saying that Tesla's not making money, but, you know, take a page out of Netflix's playbook here. You know, they tell investors they aren't going to be producing free cash flow for years and years because they want to invest in original content. I think Tesla should take a very similar approach to their CapEx and say, look, if you want to see a profitable car company, like, don't invest in us, because that's not us today. We're building out to be profitable in 5 to 10 years. So I think this entire game of what they're going to fund with the current CapEx is missing the bigger picture here, which is that they're going to be losing money for the next 5 years as they build out capacity. And I'm expecting that, and I'm okay with that as a long-term investor, because I think that is indeed building earnings power. And so that's kind of the way I think about the CapEx of the company. But, you know, in the long run, all those projects you mentioned, Model Y, Model 3, Semi, the solar roof, you know, essentially just what Tesla need, the products Tesla said they're going to come out with over the next 3 to 5 years. I believe, you know, we're looking at somewhere between $15 billion of incremental CapEx over the next 5 years to get there, sort of in line with what they're doing this year, about $3 billion a year. And, you know, so I look at their $50 billion market cap and I say, okay, their outside CapEx needs are going to be $2 to $3 billion a year. We'll see how much of that they can take from internal cash flow. But, you know, at a valuation of $50 or $60 billion, I'm okay and understandably expecting dilution of 4 to 5% per year, that $2 to $3 billion number, to be able to fund the CapEx. And that's just the way the business model works right now. So, you know, I don't think saying like, oh, they're not going to have enough money, they're going to have to spend more on CapEx, this kind of gotcha statistic that people love to point to, just isn't focused on what the bulls are thinking, which is like, I want them to do an equity raise and spend more on CapEx, because I believe that with every dollar in CapEx they spend, they're growing their future earnings power. And so, you know, that's kind of my view on the CapEx situation.
Okay. Thanks so much. And Skeptic, you have 4 minutes to answer the question and then 90 seconds for rebuttal. So you have 5 minutes and 30 seconds, and then Galileo will have 90 seconds to rebut.
Okay, well, great. So at the first quarter conference call, Galileo got to ask some questions, and I thought that the answers were illuminating. He asked about Model Y production, and he evidently was under the apprehension that it would start next year. and that it would happen in Fremont, and that indeed Fremont had capacity for 700,000 cars a year. The Tesla people, Musk and I'm not sure if it was Straubel, jumped in and said, no, actually, we're jammed to the gills in Fremont. We need a new factory to build the Model Y. Well, you know, a new factory takes at least 3 years to develop, build, and start producing, and more like 4 or 5 if you look around the world. Tesla is spending zilch on the Model Y this year. Zilch, nothing. We haven't heard about any factory anywhere. By the way, in China, if there were really a material development, we would have seen a Form 8K today. We've seen no such form. The meeting happened last Tuesday. There was some memorandum of understanding. That was all a big nothing, or we would have had an 8K filed under SEC rules. So they have no factory for the Model Y, and hence they have a long, dry, arid spell in the desert with no new product for years to come. Mr. Galileo asked about the Tesla semis and asked, where will it be built? And again, there's no room in Fremont. We know it's jammed to the gills. We haven't seen any, except for the big splashy unveiling and all the promises about how there would be these big solar superchargers. All we see is the one mule being driven around every time we get close to the release of another dreadful earnings report. Again, these cars take lots of capital and lots of time to develop, and a prudent automaker this time at least would test them properly. Supercharger upgrades. Galileo asks, well, what about supercharger upgrades? Are we going to see version 3? Is Tesla going to improve its charging rate? I thought that was Tesla's moat, he says. And no, Elon Musk said, moats are lame. They're lame. That's interesting. And in effect, there is no moat here, because the other automakers who don't want to have a supercharger network right now because it's a huge liability can have one anytime they think it makes sense to. And they will once they determine it makes sense. And they can spend – the spending is – the capital is all there for them to do it when at will. But where will Tesla get the money to do its upgrade of the supercharger network? They're not even expanding it as fast as they promised. Again, that takes a lot of capital. This year we saw that they slashed their CapEx budget. They didn't add to it. They slashed it. Tesla is not only underinvested for the future, it is underinvested for the present. And if you do a search of the permits that they've applied for in Fremont, the only thing you'll see over the last year are three things: permits for the tent, permits to repair some fire damage that happened in May, and just plain old, absolutely bare bones needed maintenance to keep the factory operating. Aside from those three categories, the only other permit they have applied for is for something that's called a robotic feather duster system. That's what the permit says. So they haven't expanded their logistical infrastructure. They have a massive parts shortage in Norway. The service centers are strained to capacity. They can't deliver the cars they're making. And they are just desperately in need of massive CapEx. Their largest raise to date, I think ever, was $2 billion. Goldman Sachs says they need at least another $10.5 billion over the next 2 years. So, yes, they do need to raise capital, and it's a heck of a lot more than they've ever done. And I don't see them doing it, and I don't see how they can do it. You know, getting back to what Galileo said, he said, well, they've invested all this capital to make more money. Well, they've invested billions in capital, and they have record losses. So they're going to have to persuade Wall Street that notwithstanding that their investment of billions and billions before has only led to record losses, this time they're somehow going to be successful, despite the fact that they can't possibly introduce a new product for at least 3 or 4 years. I don't see it. I surrender any more time I have.
Okay. All right. Excellent. So, Galileo, you have 90 seconds if you'd like to respond.
Yeah, I just think there's a massive catch 22. Like the whole argument, they need a ton of capital, but then they're spending less CapEx. That's a bad thing. So more CapEx is bad because they're spending too much. Less CapEx is they're spending not enough. Like, I just think you're cherry picking the stats and not looking at a holistic level. Like, in my opinion, Tesla knows what they're doing in terms of ramping manufacturing. If you look at their annual deliveries of vehicles per year, it has grown at an incredible clip. This year, they're going to almost perhaps even double it from 100,000 to over 200,000 cars, add $11 billion in incremental revenue to their top line. That's more revenue that's getting added than GM, Ford, Porsche, any other automaker. So in my opinion, Tesla, you know, whether it's because of demand or whatever you want to call it, is expanding production capacity faster than any other automaker. So to say that, like, they don't know what they're doing, the factory's not built ready, like, you can pinpoint all of these things and make predictions and extrapolations, but when you look at the data of how quickly Tesla has expanded manufacturing, I think they know exactly what they're doing. And the one thing that says, like, they've invested billions and only produced record losses, that's looking in the rearview mirror. And the second their business model turns, two quarters after they've fully ramped every vehicle, Model S and X, cash flow is positive. That's about to happen again with Model 3 because they have to buy the robots first, then they start building the car. It's that simple. If you keep looking at the losses, you're going to be looking at the rearview mirror, and when they go profitable, it's all going to come crashing down.
Okay. All right. Thank you very much, Galileo. So we're now going to move on to our second topic, which was the topic that was submitted by Galileo. The second topic is Tesla's market share data, United States EV sales, and how Tesla is faring in the United States. And Skeptic, you are up first. You have 4 minutes on Tesla's market share data and U.S. EV sales and how Tesla is faring in the U.S.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I think it's I think what Galileo said is true. Tesla will almost double its sales in 2018. It will go from, I don't know what, 103 last year, 103,000, to probably 190,000 or so this year, maybe more, maybe less. But I guess my response to that is, so what? I mean, you're still losing money making these cars. You're making cars for a dollar and selling them for 85 cents. Of course you can go get market share if you do that. I don't think it's so extraordinary for a new car company, to get market share when they come into a new market. Alfa Romeo has taken sales away from other car makers. Volvo has, Jaguar has, Maserati has, the Genesis plate has. So to me, it's just a big so what. I'm not impressed with the fact that they're selling more cars until we see what happens after Tesla's subsidies expire and you have Jaguar and Audi and Mercedes and Porsche all rolling out their long-range luxury EVs that are priced less even before the tax credits that Tesla will no longer have. It's hard to even have a discussion about this. It's like saying, let's talk about the BlackBerry market share before the iPhone comes out. Okay.
So excuse me for 1 second, Skeptic. Excuse me, I just paused your time. Galileo, can you put your phone on mute while he's speaking? I'm guessing that's coming from your background. All right, thank you so much.
Yeah.
I'm gonna resume you, Skeptic. You have your 1 minute and 30 seconds in. Okay, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, I just if Tesla were expanding its market share and making money, that would be impressive. The fact that its revenues are growing, but its losses are growing faster, sorry, that's not a good business model. And remember, Tesla is going to cherry pick all of the highest margin, highest profit Model 3 cars in Q3 and Q4. There's a limited market for them. And once they're all gone, you're down to your mass market car, the one that they right now won't sell to anybody because they can't afford to sell it to anybody. So let's get past the expiration of the federal income tax credit and past the point where Tesla has exhausted the backlog of the people willing to pay premium prices for the Model 3. And by the way, it's cannibalizing the Model S while it does this, and see where we are and see if Tesla can actually make money this year. It certainly won't in Q1 or Q2. It'll be about $1.5 billion in the hole. So I expect the hole to get deeper, not less deep. And to me, the more they sell, the more they lose. It's not a promising business model. I surrender any other time I have.
All right, excellent. Okay, so Galileo, go ahead. You have 4 minutes on Tesla's market share data, U.S. EV sales, and how Tesla's faring in the U.S. Go ahead.
Okay, love it, Montana. You're making this so easy for me. You said building cars for $1, selling them for 85 cents. This is exactly the analogy of why I think every automaker in the entire competition is screwed, is because Tesla has the industry's leading battery cost, and they are the only ones actually making a positive gross margin on these vehicles. I know you keep saying they lose more money for every car they sell, but if you just look at the income statement, like the gross profit line is growing. Their gross margin before the Model 3 ramp was in the mid-20% range, even including for service. Now it's below that as they ramp, but I believe it's going to bounce back. And so I just think there's a huge misconception is here. Why does no automaker report the gross margins on its electric vehicles? Because they're absolutely awful and they're super negative. If you think Tesla is building a car for $1 and selling it for 85 cents, I have news for you. Every other automaker in the EV space is building cars for $1 and selling them for 50 cents. So that's just a total, like, I just don't understand how you can make the argument, but not over, and then say the competition's coming in when they have this same friction and headwind times 4x. And so the other thing that I think is interesting, to the main point though, the reason why I'm so excited to want to talk about this data is because Tesla's had the Model 3 has been the best selling electric car in the country for 6 months in a row. The Model S and X are the number 2 and 3 best selling cars in the country. So when Tesla is available, it is absolutely shattering the market share of every other car. And I get what you're saying about the competition coming, but I've been hearing this since day one. And every single year, Tesla continues to grow. They're expanding their market share this year, right when the Bolt is supposedly going mainstream and should have been the Tesla killer. Like, none of that is happening. And so I don't see how another EV made by another brand without supercharging that's triple expensive as the Bolt is going to crush Tesla's market share if the Bolt can't do it. Like, it just makes no sense to me. And I just think looking at the data is the way to go. And the data shows that Tesla is single-handedly driving the entire electric vehicle market and is expanding their market share by a huge margin this year. And so I just think talk is cheap. And if you're constantly saying what's going to happen and what's going to come out, like, there's just no, I can't really defend that other than just saying, like, you have been saying that for every electric vehicle, and the market share data proves that Tesla absolutely crushes them. So, and the whole thing about revenue growing with losses growing, like, okay, that is the biggest pillar of the short thesis. The second that Q3 and Q4 earnings come out, once again, the goalposts of the bearish rhetoric shifts from Tesla can't make money to they only made money this quarter because they're selling higher ASP cars. You're going down a slippery slope of constantly moving the goalposts. And so I just think this is looking in the rearview mirror, and it takes time to build a profitable auto company from the ground up to sell 1 million vehicles. It takes billions and billions of dollars of factories. That's why Tesla's losing money. I'm expecting them to lose money at this point in their business model. When they expand, when they hit scale, there'll be a point where these losses come in. And if that is your only bet on the short thesis, you know, you're not, there's not a shred of forward-thinking analysis here. It's all looking in the rear-view mirror at financial data and statements. And this is a big reason I think Wall Street misses it. Like, they're looking at archaic data. I'm looking at social media. Tesla has better engagement on by a landslide than any other auto brand, and they have millions and millions of followers despite not sending a drop of capital on advertising. I mean, I just don't understand how you could think that the dinosaurs who totally missed the boat on EVs are going to be able to come back and reinvent themselves in time to be able to capture market share when literally as every day goes by, they're getting further and further behind. So yeah, that's my point.
Okay, you also, in addition to your 4 minutes, you have an additional 90 seconds if you'd like to use that to rebut Skeptic's answer. Or
I just think, yeah. So a big so what? He mentioned one thing that said a big so what about, like, okay, Tesla sold this many cars, their market share is this, but it's before the iPhone comes out. A big so what? Like, electric vehicles were a niche, they were a joke. Every single automaker is now investing at a breakneck pace, billions of capital as fast as they possibly can to electrify their entire vehicle lineup. That wasn't their game plan 6 years ago, but they've seen Tesla be successful and change the paradigm of the auto industry, and that's why they're trying desperately to replicate it. So to say a so what, to say this doesn't matter, to say $20 billion worth of orders and 400,000 pre-orders, people lining up like the iPhone, which they're not doing for anyone else, is a so what, is just absolutely missing what is happening here and the scope of the disruption of the Model 3.
Okay. Skeptic, you have 90 seconds to respond if you'd like.
Sure. Well, people were lining up to buy a $35,000 car with a $7,500 income tax credit. They will all be disappointed. Many of them were lining up for that. there is zero evidence that Tesla has industry-leading battery costs. Absolutely no evidence at all. They may say they do or infer that they do, but there's zero evidence of that. All, gross profit and gross margin, you use both those terms. The problem is you have to have net profits, okay? Tesla's gross margin is always going to be higher than other auto companies because other auto companies have to have a dealership model, and Tesla does not. So Tesla has to incur operating expenses that don't show up in its gross margin, just to run its service centers and its sales centers. So the gross margin is totally meaningless if you can't have net profit, and Tesla doesn't. Now you say that this was your killer point, that these other auto companies have awful margins on their EVs. Well, you're exactly 100% right. Guess what? They make internal combustion engine cars that are profitable and that can subsidize their losing EV manufacturer. They manufacture EVs because of mandates, because of ZEV credits, because they are forced to. Tesla is stuck with money-losing EVs. The other companies at least have a much larger line of business
that's time.
Profitable.
That's time.
Okay.
Thank you.
There we go. That's it.
Okay. So now we are going to move on to the third topic, and thank you guys both for that. The third topic was chosen by me, so we all kind of agreed in advance it would be cool if each one of us got to pick a topic. I picked this topic at some point, like Wednesday of last week, before everything happened this weekend. And the topic is Elon Musk's behavior on social media. Is it good for Tesla? Galileo, you are first. You have 4 minutes to talk about Elon Musk's behavior on social media and whether or not it is good for Tesla. Go ahead.
Yeah, so, I mean, I just want to start out with saying that, like, what he said, you know, calling some guy names, like, I just think that's totally productive, and Elon needs to be way more mature than that, and that is just, like, it would kill me to see something happen to Tesla, and it kills me to see people reporting on Elon's tweets, not the accomplishments of the company, so I think that's a huge mistake, and he better learn from it, because this cannot continue, and I'm, like, not a fan of it. I just want to be super clear, like, I think his recent tweets of calling people names and, like, clearly getting affected when people tweet bad things at him is just, like, pathetic and not what a CEO should be doing. So, you know, that just is what it is. Like, I wish that he didn't do that, frankly. But the flip side is, you know, Twitter and social media, you know, Tesla is leveraging these new platforms in a really strategic way. And that's part of the reason they don't have any advertising expenses is, like, Elon Musk has 22 million Twitter followers. Before he made himself look like an idiot this week, this was an incredible asset. You know, he has a direct megaphone to say anything he wants. Every single reporter will publish an article about it. This is a marketing machine that Tesla can generate, you know, millions, hundreds of millions, maybe even billions worth of free press because of their use of social media, which I think they do far better than anyone else. So I think there is a good side to social media. And I think in the long run, Elon's presence on Twitter is a really, really good thing if he uses it correctly, because it does incredible free marketing for the company. You know, look at what they're doing with Consumer Reports, where over Twitter, Elon Musk, you know, figured out, like, there's some braking issue and then they fix it. And then with an over-the-air update, like, that's a good thing that happened on Twitter. Him coordinating the Australian battery project with the government there over Twitter, another good thing that happened over Twitter. So I think that there are good things from it. And additionally, just like him being able to tweet customer responses. Like, there's a podcast called Ride the Lightning, which is one of the most listened to Tesla fan podcasts. It's done by a guy called Ryan McCaffrey. I love it. And he always tweets at Elon's questions that his customers have. Elon will reply. Then he goes on his podcast and talks about it. Like, I think this fosters a culture and a brand that no other automaker has, and is a huge advantage for Tesla, is this sort of cult community that they have. And, you know, Elon engaging with people directly on Twitter has helped create that and has been a really positive thing in a lot of ways. So I think, you know, if you just take a couple of his tweets out of context and say he's an idiot and he's mature and off the rails, like, sure, there's some cred to that, but you're missing the bigger statement, I think the bigger picture here, which is Tesla is the only automaker that's figured out how to use social effectively to generate a lot of free marketing for their cars. And I think that's a structural advantage in their business model, where, you know, if you watch TV, auto companies put more ads on there than almost anyone else. Tesla doesn't spend a single dollar. You know, this is part of the evidence of why I think Tesla is going to have a structurally higher profit margin than all of the legacy auto companies, because they're leveraging these new technologies like Twitter to get the word out, to do the marketing for them, to interact with customers, instead of the legacy marketing, which is pissing hundreds of millions of dollars down the drain for every other auto company. So, you know, that is what it is. Like, I think Elon should stay on Twitter. I think he should stay involved. I think he should talk to customers, but I also think he should just grow up and not call people names. And what he did last week, calling some guy a pedophile, is just absurd. And like, I don't endorse that at all. I think he's an idiot. Like, you know what I mean? So I just, yeah, that's all I got.
Okay. Thanks. Skeptic, you have, 4 minutes to talk about Elon Musk's behavior on social media. Is it good for Tesla? And 90 seconds on top of that to rebut Galileo. So you have 5 minutes and 30 seconds all told, and then Galileo will have 90 seconds.
Okay. So, you know, if you listen to marriage counselors, they'll say, well, the very thing you love about someone at first are the things that will eventually drive you crazy about them. And I feel like the Musk cult, to use the word that Galileo used, and I think it's an accurate one, is discovering that. They love how bold and iconoclastic and fearless Musk is, and how he's taken advantage of this social media in a way no other CEO has, unless you think of Donald Trump as a CEO, that both Trump and Musk seem to be masters of it, and to use Twitter promiscuously. Musk is also very reckless, and he's unfocused, and he's narcissistic. Was it intelligent for Musk to insult analysts at the conference call, to call them boring and boneheaded, to dismiss their questions, which I thought, by the way, were important and intelligent, and to turn it over to a social media guy? Was it smart for him to lash out at short sellers as if they are in any way responsible for any of the ineptitude and manufacturing problems that Tesla's having? Is it smart for him to lash out at journalists personally? Nasty stuff. Was it smart for him to accuse Martin Tripp, he does all this on Twitter, of sabotage and hacking, and to implicate Tripp in a supposed plot to shoot up the Gigafactory, and to accuse both Tripp and the reporter Lynette Lopez of being participants in some bribery conspiracy? Was that a smart thing to do? Was it smart to sue Tripp and then precipitate this whistleblower claim to the SEC? I think that was incredibly reckless and idiotic. Was it smart to accuse that diver, who, by the way, is more than any individual on the face of the earth responsible for the rescue of those 13 people in Thailand, to accuse him of being a pedophile? No, Galileo, that's not just absurd. That is sick and despicable. Okay, if that pedophilia accusation were not enough to prompt an outcry to force Musk to step down, what's it going to take? He's put his board of directors in a terrible position here. That he's exposed the company and himself to a defamation claim, possibly criminal, in Thailand. No other CEO at any other U.S. public company, I think, would last 24 hours after making that accusation. But Musk may well, because there is a cult around him, of course. Where does that accusation come from? That's what should really concern the Tesla board and the Tesla investors. Why was it so important for Musk to be the center of attention in this Thailand story? Every news story you read as the rescue efforts were underway said, and the billionaire entrepreneur visionary Elon Musk is at work. He has forwarded engineers. He's working on a solution. I think that you have – by the way, one phone call, and Musk would have known that his solution was idiotic and not feasible. One simple phone call, because it wasn't. He has a deep-seated insecurity. He has immense narcissism. He always needs to be the center of everything. He has to be the great savior of all of us. And that is a problem. That's not curable. There's going to be more of it. So is the pedophile accusation a bridge too far? Will we hear at least an apology and a quick settlement? I don't know. The Tesla board of directors has been missing in action from the start. Maybe they're still asleep. But Musk has created problems Tesla didn't need, and those problems go directly to the kind of person Musk is. Now, he chose to create a cult of personality at Tesla. He built it. The Tesla investors chose to embrace it. And I think they're both now stuck with it. And it'll be fascinating to watch it play out. But in my opinion, and this is just an opinion, there's no proving it one way or the other, what once seemed charming and lovely and exciting is going to become ugly and problematic and damaging. I'm all done.
Okay. Thank you for letting me know you're all done, so I don't have to guess when you're going to start another sentence again. Okay, Galileo, you have 90 seconds if you would like to rebut that. Go ahead.
So, I mean, I think a couple of points that you mentioned I think are interesting, like the conference call thing. Like, I actually think that was a really smart move by Elon Musk, and he, like, let me on to giving a voice to retail investors. So I think, like, there's some aspects of his communication that you think are bad that I actually think are a huge edge. And, like, in terms of tweeting about the short sellers, like, if you do your homework and read the Fairfax case, read the chapters from the Great Divide, you'll know that, like, there are companies where there's huge short positions that people do orchestrate negative comments. And by highlighting the fact that that could happen, I think Elon places increased scrutiny on those events and therefore makes it less likely for them to continue doing that if they are.
Hang on, again, we lost you there for a second.
Galileo,
Chris, can you let him start that again?
Yeah, and, of course. Okay. Galileo, can you hear us?
Yeah, give me like 1 second.
Okay, sure. I stopped your time, so you just let me know when you're ready, and we'll let you keep
going. Can I suggest you just let him take it from the top so he gets a good?
Yeah, of course.
Yeah.
Okay. Can you guys hear me now?
Yeah, want to go ahead and start over? We'll give you a fresh 90 seconds. Go ahead.
Yeah. So, just quickly, I think like 2 points that you brought up, like I think him interrupting the analyst on the conference call to let me on definitely could have gone smoother, but like him trying to give retail investors a voice, disrupt what the conference call is, like I think is really cool and forward thinking and an example of him being outside the box in a good way. Additionally, his comments about short sellers and the tweets that he's done around that, I actually think are smarter than you'd realize at first glance, because if there is a coordinated short attack against the company, which unfortunately does happen, and there have been documented cases about it, then him by bringing attention to the fact that that could be happening places increased scrutiny on those potential short sellers and therefore makes them less likely to continue spreading negative stories if they are. So I think those cases actually make a lot of sense from Elon's point of view. But once again, like, I can't vouch for what he's doing. And I think he should listen to your rant, Montana Skeptic, about what you just said. And like, honestly, like I can't defend it because he's an idiot on Twitter and what he said supports everything you're saying. And I wish he would grow up because I love Tesla. I love what they're doing. We just don't need to give this kind of ammo to short sellers, and he's laying it out on a silver platter for you guys, and I just think that's a huge mistake, and I would hate to see Tesla crumble because of that, so I hope he learns.
All right, thanks a lot, Galileo. Okay, so what we'll do now is we're just going to do some final statements and 2 final, even shorter rebuttals. You guys can use this time any way you'd like. You each have up to 4 minutes if you'd like to use it. Then you'll each just have a quick 60 seconds to rebut one another, and then we're going to call it a day. Montana Skeptic, you will speak first. You have 4 minutes to address whatever you'd like and make your final plea. Go ahead.
Yeah. Okay. Well, first of all, Chris, and thank you for putting this together, and I've really enjoyed a discussion with Galileo. You know, that's not just a shouting match, and it's been useful. And I think he's done a great job of expressing his take on the company and why he's so optimistic about it. So that's always really useful. My sense is this, that Galileo has not been lucky enough yet to live through a recession. I've seen several. He's not been fortunate enough yet as an adult to see how cyclical the auto industry is. He has grown up as a investing adult in an environment of extraordinary interest rate repression. And he does not understand, this is just my view, that how quickly sentiment can change, how quickly emotions can change, how quickly markets can change, how quickly greed can turn to fear. And when it happens, it sweeps away the weakest first. And I think Tesla is just extraordinarily weak. It lives from capital raise to capital raise. But for a capital raise, it is always on the brink of insolvency. And right now, with a negative current assets of several billion dollars, it obviously is going to need more capital this year, as Galileo acknowledged. I think that other automakers have a huge advantage. They have a portfolio of products, and those products are largely profitable. And the fact that they are compelled to make EVs that don't make economic sense and would never be bought other than as niche performance products, which is what Tesla should have stuck with, I think, absent huge subsidies, that makes a big difference. And they are going to be able to outcompete Tesla. The Jag I-Pace is a beautiful car. You know Audi's going to have a beautiful car. You know that Porsche will. There will be others down the road. Mercedes certainly will. And the fact is that the interior of the Model 3 has become tired. It was never all that luxurious. And I think it won't be the aspirational car much longer, especially when these other cars hit the market. And it's happening. This year, you know, Tesla will exhaust this backlog of high-priced Model 3 buyers. Galileo accused me of not being forward-looking. Look, if Tesla can't eke out a tiny profit in Q3 and Q4, it will never eke it out. Because once it gets to 2019 and 2020 and 2021, there ain't nothing to sell but the Model 3 and the senescent Model S and Model X, which are money losers. And Tesla cannot make money selling Model 3s for $35,000 or $40,000, especially in an environment where they don't come with big subsidies. So, you know, time will tell. Ultimately, it's very hard for me to pencil out any profitability of Tesla that pencils out to a valuation that makes any sense at anything higher than $20 or $30 a share. I just don't see it. I can't get there from here. Thank you, Chris.
Okay, so Galileo, now you will have 4 minutes to give your closing statement, 60 seconds if you'd like on top of that to rebut Mr. Skeptic for a total of 5 minutes, and then Mr. Skeptic will have 60 seconds, and then we will be over. So Galileo, you have 5 minutes. Go ahead.
Yep. So from a high level, the way I see it is we're at an incredible, like, once in a century disruption of the transport system. And it's happening in two ways, which makes it an incredibly unique time. The first is the electrification of the industry. The second is these vehicles going autonomous. And so I think the company that can successfully lead in those areas is a massive company that's going to be built and will not look like legacy auto companies. Tesla had this vision from day one and it started building it before anybody else. Advantage that traditional legacy auto companies had in the past is now a huge Achilles heel. Relationships with Madison Avenue advertising firms of spending hundreds of millions of dollars of advertising, expertise on building the internal combustion engine, a franchise dealership network, you know, not having your own stores, like not using social media. Like, I just think the time is now to build an auto company from the ground up. And I think having a visionary CEO doing that is a massive, you know, multi-trillion dollar industry disruption and change that I'm betting on. And I think we're in the very early innings of seeing Tesla's business model unfold. And that's why if you compare them to all the old metrics and look at how much money they're losing now, you miss the entire story because you're failing to appreciate just how rapidly Tesla is growing and how different their business model is going to look at maturity from every other automaker. The simplest way I can boil down my bullishness in Tesla into one word is software. This is a Silicon Valley company started by Elon Musk, who sold his first video game that he coded himself when he was 12 years old. Software is eating the world. Software is eating every single aspect and niche of the way we build cars, what's in cars, how they run, how we interact with our cars. This is a totally fundamentally different set of skills than building an internal combustion engine with analog devices that every other automaker has built their business around. By building a car software first, there is a slew of advantages, you know, over-the-air software updates, upgrades to the autopilot software, controlling everything via touchscreen, setting up for a future where voice and AI assistants control everything in the car. Tesla has thought through this future and is leading it by building a car with software in mind first. If you look at the teardown that Jack Monroe and Monroe, or Sandy Monroe just did of with Monroe Associates of the Model 3, he says that the circuit board and the chips of the Model 3 are like an F-35 fighter jet and that every other single automaker can be scared. Where he was critical of Tesla was how they build the cars, but he said that hundreds of other people and experts and other auto industry employees and executives could help them fix that. What those hundreds of auto industry executives and employees can't fix is expertise at software. And that's something that Tesla's built in their DNA. And I think recruiting talented software engineers is something that Tesla's good at, that every other automaker is currently really struggling at, not investing in. It's not their competency. And that is why their vehicles are going to fail. Tesla's advantage with batteries is not where they're building them, what's in them, or any of that. But really the advantage is their battery management software, which they've been perfecting with hundreds of thousands of cars on the road, fine-tuning exactly the charge rates to maximize the life of the batteries. Like, these are advantages that the I-Pace, that the Bolt, that the e-tron are not going to have, that will play out over 5 years, that will make those cars flop. So everything comes back to software in my mind. You know, there's an app that controls the car that also controls your solar panel. Like, I just think if you miss the boat on that major differentiator that Tesla has, then you're missing the boat on why they're so different. These are computers with wheels, not a jumble of parts and engines. And that fundamental difference is why Tesla is going to be so, so successful in the long term. And yeah, so that's it. And I guess for fun, I think this is a multi-$100 billion company. For example, what they're doing in Australia, you know, you said that project didn't matter at all. I mean, I think they've changed the paradigm to prove that batteries are cheaper, more rapid, and far more cleaner response to, you know, peak emissions for the grid. That is a multi-$100 billion use case that we're just scratching the surface of, which Tesla's just validated on an unprecedented scale. Once again, that competency goes back to software. So I think this is a software company at its core that's building other products, and we're going to see this expertise in software additionally with what they're doing in autonomy, collecting billions of miles, magnitudes more than any other of their competition, which I think is going to be an incredibly massive moat in the long run for their autonomous vehicle program. Like, everything ties back to software. A software-first automaker built from the ground up today in the world of the internet is going to have a massive advantage versus the dinosaurs trying to pivot to two new business models, electrification and autonomy, that they have zero expertise in, that Tesla invented. So, yeah, that's my conclusion.
All right. Thanks so much, Galileo. And Skeptic, if you'd like, you have 60 seconds just to rebut that, and then we're going to call it a day. Go ahead.
Okay. Well, as far as computers with wheels go, it's a shame Tesla can't learn to build the wheels correctly, because the computers don't do much good when the wheels keep falling apart. Every auto company on the planet is getting to be excellent at software. If you don't think the I-Pace has sophisticated battery management software, you're living in an alternate universe. The Audi will as well. The Porsche will as well. The Mercedes EV will as well. Every auto company has talented software people. They're all using OTA updates or planning them. The idea that Tesla has some lead here is absurd, especially when you see how rapidly they're bleeding important engineers and management people in their autonomous driving and other software-related ventures. Okay, thanks so much, Chris and Galileo.
Guys, thank you so much. It was just awesome having both of you guys on. I knew it was going to be a nice civil discussion just from the email exchanges that we had earlier this week. I'm super glad that you guys took this on extremely short notice. I think you both did an incredible job. And we got it in under an hour, which was our goal also, too. So, listen, I can't thank you guys enough for both coming on. You guys are both high-class individuals in my book. And maybe we can do it again sometime down the road.
All right. Thanks so much. Bye.
Yeah. Thanks for having me, Chris.
All really right, guys. It. Thanks again. Take care.
Okay. Bye.
All right, that was it. That was Montana Skeptic and Galileo Russell from Hyperchange TV. I'd encourage you to follow them both on Twitter. I think he's at Montana Skeptic 1. Galileo's YouTube channel is Hyperchange TV, so you can go on there and subscribe. I thought both the participants did a fantastic job. And last but not least, I want to thank you guys for tuning in and listening. So we will touch base again soon, but for now, I have to run. Peace.